What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is Amy Brown from Four Things with Amy Brown. Today, healthier is happening at CVS Health in more ways than you've ever seen. It's wellness destinations for seniors, including select locations with Oak Street Health and CVS Pharmacy. It's doctors, nurses, pharmacists, and everyone in between offering quality care and support virtually, in person, and on the phone. It's in-home evaluations through Signify Health and meeting mental health needs through Aetna. And those are just a few of the ways that healthier is happening. To see more, visit cvshealth.com/healthierhappenstogether. CVS Pharmacy, Oak Street Health, CVS Specialty, Signify Health, and Aetna are part of CVS Health. Eligibility and services vary by location and individual.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of 100 Words or Less, the podcast. I'm your host, Ray Harkins, and I'm tired. I'm sick. This holiday just beat the absolute living crap out of me. But anyways, that's not important, right? What's important is that we are hanging out today with Jay Weinberg, professional drummer and just all-around nice dude. More about him in a minute, but propertyofzach.com. Visit their website, find all the latest in news, reviews, features, in-depth analyses of this music scene that we call home, and check it out. I love what they do, and I love our partnership with them, so give them some love. No real monologue today. I apologize, but my brain really can't fire on all cylinders, but in any event, our guest today, I am extremely excited to bring you, Jay Weinberg, who I know you have obviously seen in the news as of late, because he recently left his band that he was playing with against me. He'd been playing with them for about 2 or so years, but that wasn't the real reason I wanted to talk to him. Basically, he's just a professional drummer, like a dude that's played with Madball. You may have heard of a man called Bruce Springsteen, and I obviously am very sarcastic in saying that because I know everyone who has ever heard music has at least a topical knowledge of Bruce Springsteen. He's played drums with him for a little bit, and he's a traveling guy, and he's always wanted to make his money or his living with playing drums, and kind of however you can achieve that is obviously the direction he's going, but it all comes from a very sincere place. And so that was one of the reasons though I wanted to chat with him, and he just happened to be in Southern California. This conversation was before everything that happened with Against Me. Honestly, a good 95% of our conversation didn't even really concentrate on that band. and the time that he spent in there. It was mostly about, his upbringing, kind of how he got into drums and everything that we talk about. Because for whatever reason, I just don't talk about people's current projects. Cause, I don't know. I just don't delve into it too much. But anyways, here's the conversation and I hope you enjoy.
Listening to Neo, the interview that you did with Matt Pike, which is actually kind of funny because I'm meeting him later today.
Oh, nice.
He and his wife are going to come to the E Street Band show.
Oh, that's great.
Tonight. And, listening to just like, it's basically going A to B for someone's life. And like, you see what they do now, but hearing really how they got there and like where the idea came from to do what they do. It's awesome.
Yeah. And that's what I like to do too. Cause it's like people, I also like to draw similarities where even if you don't like the person's band or what they do as a profession, like you'll still understand that they come from a similar world.
Yeah.
That, like similar world. So you're not just like, oh, who the fuck? Like, I have no idea where this person came from. And you're like, oh, like they're just like me.
Yeah.
They just found out about, they started buying records when they were however old and figured it out from there.
Yeah, totally.
But yeah, so with you, born and raised in the East Coast?
Yeah, New Jersey my whole life. Lived in a couple different towns, but kind of stayed around the same area, based around Middletown, New Jersey.
Okay, yeah.
Which is five.
What exit?
Oh, 114. Yeah. I was always between 109 and 114. And now I've been living in Hoboken, which is right outside New York.
Sure.
I've been there for five, almost 6 years.
Oh, okay.
I go to school there and stuff. But growing up in New Jersey my whole life. And it was right outside of Red Bank, New Jersey, which was kind of like it was the strangest hardcore scene ever. And it was, I guess that was like 2005 to 2007 or 8. It was like, it was so short lived. My experience with the Red Bank, hardcore scene, but, it was strange.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really strange.
And so you're, most people would be able to just read your name and understand you come from a lineage of musicians. Like there's people that music has been an important part of your life.
It's been everything. Yeah.
And so I think a lot of people do get jealous when it's like they have, either friends or basically their parents are like, hey, like here's what music is. And like, let's get you started off. Right.
Right.
Whereas like, I look at my parents or other, some of my other friends are just like, music was like, it existed, like the radio.
Yeah.
But there was never like that sort of, here you go. And then I also do this as a profession and like kind of have this sort of like, behind the scenes, yet I've got a really cultured taste in music and like, here you go, son.
Yeah.
And so like, what was your, your experience growing up? Like, for most people that, can do any research online would know, like, your father obviously plays drums and was... So like how was you being raised within that environment? I'm sure it was different and weird in a way.
Yeah, it was. It was really eclectic. Mm-hmm. I grew up. My mom was really, really musical, and she came from like her dad was really musical. He was an amazing pianist, and he was like he had kind of both sides of the brain working, where he could play piano really well, but he was also a physicist.
That's not common.
No, it was really weird, and he worked in Signal Corps. And, and he was a teacher at Monmouth University and stuff, but he also had a knack for the arts and for music. And, And so my mom, although she had been totally, she was super into rock and roll and everything. She raised my sister and I, my sister and me on classical music. And that's all I knew for the first 5 years of my life.
Right.
All she played. I have heard the story that I was born to the song Voodoo Child. which I think is pretty awesome.
That is pretty awesome. Were you? But I presume it was in the hospital.
Yeah. So you know, my mom was into all that stuff, like Hendrix and you know Led Zeppelin, classic music like that. But she was also really into classical music.
You know?
And that's all I knew. It was Beethoven and Chopin and you know Mozart,
classics.
Yeah. But that's all I knew of music. Like I didn't know what rock and roll was until The Who was doing Quadrophenia in 95. And that was like, you know, that was a band that my mom and dad, I think, shared that they loved. And they really wanted to get my sister and me into it. But my mom was like, I don't know. Like,
yeah,
that's totally different. They have no experience with that. And so they brought me, like, they gave me Quadrophenia. And I just could not stop listening to it. Like, I don't remember specifically, but they tell me that I would like scream the lyrics in the car when we played it. And so anyway, my first show that I ever went to, I was five and my mom and dad took me to go see The Who.
Yeah.
Quadrophenia.
I love that. The experience of you, your parents sitting there, I can just imagine them sitting at like the dinner table being like, all right, are we going to do this? Like,
you know,
are we ready to unleash this world? Like,
yeah.
It's just funny that like, because that's not a common conversation.
No.
That's so cool.
It was, and you know, considering like the backgrounds that they both come from, like really into rock and roll, that they just didn't show their kids. And like my sister is 3 years older than me, so she was 8 at the time.
Right.
And you know, that's like a bit, that's like when, well, that's when I started getting into like finding out my own music
that I
wanted to check out.
Right.
And, but yeah, they tell me like, I have kind of a visual memory of it, but
yeah.
They tell me I was on my dad's shoulders with like my fist in the air. And I was just like, I remember they had that, this like ocean scenery with Roger Daltrey singing Rain Over Me or whatever. And that's the only kind of visual thing I remember. I think Billy Idol was Cousin Kevin or something like that. It was a really wild show. That was my first introduction to like guitar based music and loud music.
Yeah.
And I, you know, from that they passed down the Beatles and the Stones.
Right. Once they're like, okay, like he's shown an interest in this.
Yeah.
Like, here we go. And so like your home life, like how was it, you know, how was it obviously growing up and like, did your mom work?
Like she was a teacher for 15 years.
Okay.
But when she had my sister and me, she just concentrated on like,
raising a child. Yeah.
Yeah. And that was, it was a big help because, you know, because she's a history teacher.
Okay.
You know, she just was able to help my sister and me through, you know, through school.
Of course.
And studying. And that was always really important to her. That's probably like still the reason I'm like still trying to plug away at school now.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
It's kind of been hard to balance with the band and stuff. But her support when my sister and I were younger was like, that was everything. School wise.
It's so funny because like my mom was a teacher as well. And it's like, I think there's something that's totally unspoken and like in our DNA when your parents are teachers, where it's just like, yo, I got it. Cause I dropped out of school and like, my promise to my mom was like, I'll graduate when I'm 30. Like by the time I'm 30, I will have graduated. And I did. And it was seriously. You're
talking about college?
Yeah. And I was like, I gotta fucking do this. And like, it was just that, like you said, that sort of the culture that you're brought up in where it's like, this is important. No matter what else, you know, whatever else I'm doing, I should pay attention to this and at least like figure out how I'm going to eventually achieve this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had always wanted to do music ever since I just started high school, you know? It was always something that I knew I wanted to do. It just got to the point where I couldn't balance the two. So I was doing college you know, like Madball simultaneously.
Right.
You know, going to Queens to like write our record,
right?
Like 5 days a week, 7 or 6 days a week, you know, and working on that like 8 hours a day on top of doing an 18 credit semester or something like that.
And then touring. Yeah.
It got hectic. So I once some time had passed, I was just like, okay, I'm going to kind of do one, go back to the other, and like it's been cool. But yeah. So anyway, yeah, when I was younger, that was kind of my home life, because it was centered around school.
Uh-huh.
When I was 9, I started playing hockey, and I was never really into sports before I found hockey.
It was like, did you even play baseball, or you didn't kind of
did, like, right, here and there. I played soccer for like when I was, you know, 6 or 7.
Right.
And I just, I just never got it. Right. I don't know. It just never clicked.
Yeah. Yeah.
But then, went to a hockey game, and I couldn't stop. And,
right.
You know, started skating, started playing hockey, uh-huh, started playing the house league.
Okay.
And music wasn't even really, like, at this point I was like 9, and music wasn't on the table yet.
Oh yeah.
I wasn't even in my mind.
Right.
So my life was just consumed with hockey, and I was a goalie, and
oh, okay. That's an intense position.
It was the only, but you know what I started was because I couldn't skate well.
Right.
So I thought, like, as a goalie,
the least amount of skating. Yeah, right, right.
But turns out you learn later that the goalie skates the most.
Dude, hustling constantly, yeah.
So that didn't, that I, my it plan, backfired. My plan kind of backfired, but,
yeah,
but I kind of gravitated towards the position, and you can almost kind of draw parallels to being a drummer in a sense, is that like, you're like the last line of defense. And,
right,
you know, as a goalie, there's like a saying that if you win, it's a team victory. You lose,
it's your fault, right?
You know, in a lot of ways, you can kind of draw parallels to being a drummer. It's like, well, the tempo is in the drummer's hands, and the, you know,
yep,
the vibe of the, you know, the pulse of the song is kind of in the drummer's hands. So
if you fall apart,
dude, it's
set's
yeah,
done.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So so I kind of liked that. Just the pressure of the situation, and uh-huh, like, you know, you either perform or you don't, and you succeed or you don't. And
right,
that was kind of like, I liked it. And I played travel hockey.
I was going to say, you traveled around and did club hockey. Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of like an East Coast,
okay,
league. Like we played, we were based out of Red Bank.
Mm-hmm.
You know, played in New York a lot.
Right.
Went up to do like the Can-Am tournament in Lake Placid. And, went up to Canada a couple times, like, mm-hmm, played in Toronto and Montreal.
Yeah.
But, and that's when I really loved traveling with a group of people and experiencing just like a place that wasn't my own.
Right.
And in a lot of ways, that like looking back on it, traveling playing hockey,
mm-hmm,
is so much like, you know, touring with your band.
Oh, totally.
Or something like that. You know, you meet the other team, and
yep,
it's all, it, you know, it was all respectful. Like all the teams like got along and hung out.
Yeah.
And then you play, and that's
right.
What,
yeah,
it
but
is.
You're competitive because that's, yeah, the nature of the sport, but you're not cutthroat.
Yeah, yeah. Music isn't competitive, but in a way, you know, you go to a town,
mm-hmm,
and you meet the other bands that are local to that town that are playing the show. And,
of course.
You know, you kind of create that little community. So that was really cool. And I loved playing hockey.
Right.
But when I got to high school, that was kind of like,
well, yeah, yeah. It's always funny. Like, anytime my friends have played, like, you know, done that whole circuit, it's, yeah, like, you really do have to make that sort of decision whether or not you have the time to dedicate to that, or it's like, all right, well, school's not going to be that important. I'm going to be traveling.
Yeah.
You know, it's tough to be able to kind of choose one or the other, especially when you're playing at such a high level,
yeah,
at an earlier age.
Yeah. I really enjoyed playing, and it was all that was on my mind,
yeah,
until, you know, I played guitar,
right,
here and there. Like I didn't really connect with it. It was cool, but I played,
yeah,
bass, kind of liked it,
right,
whatever. Hockey was just the most important thing,
right,
and
right,
then for whatever reason I just picked up the drums,
mm-hmm,
and that just consumed my thoughts, you know, that took over everything.
Yeah.
So when I got into high school, played high school hockey for a year or, uh-huh, 2 years, and I remember it going up until the last day before like training camp for our, I played for my school.
Okay.
Had a good, you know, coaching relationship with my coach. And I told him like the day before our like training camp started for the upcoming season,
uh-huh,
I had been agonizing over the choice of like, well, I don't know anything about drums, but I know I really, really like it.
Right.
I'm comfortable with hockey, but I can't do both and be as good as I would want to be at both. Mm-hmm. You know, I have to pick.
You want a dedicated discipline. Sure.
Yeah. You don't want to just half-ass two things.
Right. Right.
And be okay at both. You want to be better at one.
Sure.
It was just a gut level decision that I had made. That was just like, well, this feels like the right thing to do right now. Right. I don't know if I'm going to regret it. Like I was always, you know, when I was a kid, I was like, oh man, I'm going to play like in college. Like I wanted to
sure.
go.
I wanted a scholarship.
Like,
sure.
Yeah. Whatever, like, yeah. I was, you know, when I was like, God, you know, 12 years old, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go to Michigan University.
Right.
I'm going
right.
to like play hockey. Like no way.
Who were your touchdowns as far as NHL players were concerned? Were you like, I want to be like these guys.
Loved Martin Brodeur. Like sure. Growing up in Jersey, I was a Devils fan, and
right, you kind of have to be.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, I had that love hate of guys that were really good mm-hmm. but played on the Flyers.
Like, oh,
dude,
yeah.
Philadelphia.
You're like, dude, I can't like this. Yeah,
yeah, like Brian Boucher in 2003.
Sure.
Great, you know, he was an amazing goalie, and he actually like kind of fell off the face of the earth because mm-hmm. he didn't play any. In the NHL anymore, whatever.
Yeah,
loved watching him play, but I hated it.
Of course,
hated all the fun.
You're like, I like you, I hate your team.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, right, right.
You know, Patrick Waugh and sure. Johan Hedberg and like goalies.
I loved goalies.
And
the only goalie I ever, because I liked hockey for a very brief period of my life, but Ed Belfour from Chicago Blackhawks. He played
then he went to Dallas.
Yep.
I remember. Because I became a Devils fan at like a fortunate time. I became a fan in like 1999.
Oh yeah, yeah.
And then watched that season. They didn't forget if they even made it into the playoffs. I forget whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then but 2000 they won the cup.
Right.
And I remember watching the last couple games of that series, and Ed Belfour had gotten the flu.
I think
he got the flu.
Sure.
And He didn't play well the last game at home that mm-hmm. we went to that the Devils could have won the cup, but
okay.
Mike Modano scored a goal in like the third overtime or something like that. And it was heartbreaking because
yeah.
we were all there, like wanted to see the cup.
Right,
and
of course.
But then like 2 days later, I remember them saying like, oh, Ed Belfour was really sick, but they still played him.
Right.
And that's when Jason Arnott scored in second overtime. And
sure.
Loved it. But
that's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. But
and so then obviously in your home life, like, you know, when did you realize that obviously, like, you know, what your dad was doing was, you know, something that's different from every other dad that
yeah.
kind of exists in the, yeah, I mean, like when you're going to school and
yeah,
stuff
yeah.
like that, like,
I honestly didn't even know what he was doing when I was,
yeah.
when I was younger, you
sure.
know, he had the TV show.
Right.
And I would see him, you know, he would come back from that around like 9 or 10 at night. So I'm going to bed.
Right. Of course.
And, you know, I'm like doing homework or having dinner or something. And,
sure.
And so I knew that was.
You're like, I knew he showed up to do that.
But. Yeah, yeah. I knew he was doing that, but I didn't watch the show. You know,
right.
I never watched the show until I was like, until I could stay up until,
mm-hmm.
You know, the show was on at 12:30 at night.
Yeah.
I'm not staying up.
No.
Mid-grade school?
No, no way.
So then it was only when the E Street Band had gotten back together for the reunion tour
right.
in 99
mm-hmm.
That I started, like, I think it was something that he and my mom had talked about, like, do we bring them on tour? Do we bring,
right.
you know, Jay and Allie, like, to the shows and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. And, you know, I would go watch, and I didn't get it. I just didn't. I was like, so there's all these people
right.
at this show, and it's in a big,
well,
like, place.
I know. And it's kind of funny, because I've always reflected on that, like, you know, your experience, or, you know, people like these experience where it's like you're raised in an environment, like I was just saying, where, you know, it's not, you know, your dad isn't an accountant. Your dad doesn't do this, like, specific, like, you know, okay, I know what that
right.
means.
Yeah.
But then you're dropped in the situation. You've got no context. Like you said, you're just
yeah.
showing up to the show and just being like, oh, whoa, like, what's this?
Yeah. I didn't know they had records.
Right.
I didn't know that there was music. Like, I was like, why do these people all know this stuff? I've never heard this in my life. But I didn't know.
Yeah.
It was, I think I found out that they had, like, put out records maybe, like, 3 years later.
Right.
It's like, oh, these songs, I can listen to these songs when they're not playing the shows.
Right.
I got and
right.
And it started putting it together.
Right.
And they kept touring, you know, they did the reunion tour.
Of course.
They did a record, you know, they did the Rising record.
Right.
And that's kind of when I was like putting it together, started traveling with them and sure. just kind of getting a feel for what tour
yeah.
was or whatever. It's like, oh, you go to these different cities and you play shows and
right.
you play these songs that you've written or whatever.
Yeah,
you
know, yeah,
it's,
yeah.
Just that, it's just getting a feel because I had no idea ever.
Yeah.
And then I started putting it together and actually, one of the guys that worked on the tour, his name was Andrew Courtney.
Mm-hmm.
He got me into, when I was like really young and just totally impressionable, he gave me three records, that like changed my life. He uh-huh. gave me, Alkaline Trio, Good Morning. This was like when I was like 12 or 13.
Sure.
Gave me Good Morning, Thrice, Illusion of Safety, and, Rocket from the Crypt, The Dracula was
Scream, Dracula Scream. Yeah.
Yeah, give me that. And
that's a huge. Yeah, no, that's a great like cross section.
Yeah, because yeah. he saw like maybe some bands that I was listening to. I forget what, but he was like, oh, you might be into this stuff. So mm-hmm. he gave me those records, and that was huge.
Yeah.
For me, but
that's cool.
But, yeah, but anyway, so yeah, touring was traveling with them was opening my eyes to just like what. He had been up. My dad had been up to. I had no. I honestly had no clue
yeah, yeah.
what he was doing for like the first 10 years of my life.
Right. You're just like, well, that's my dad.
I didn't know.
Well, yeah, and that I think that's indicative of obviously, your parents. You know, they were very calculated in what they were obviously exposing you to, and it's like it's good that there's that. You know, you were able to exist within a childhood that you were able to be a child and not like. Thinking about these, like, all right, place all this in context. You're just like, I don't care. I'm gonna play hockey or I want to, you know.
Yeah, that was even when I was traveling with them then.
Right.
I was still hockey was it for me.
Right.
I never really wanted to play music.
Right.
It didn't interest me.
I presume your parents were pretty excited about you being super into hockey. Like they were.
Yeah, yeah, they were pretty stoked on that, and God. They would have to be if they were like my mom would drive me
you to all
to
you,
a
yeah.
6 o'clock like 6 a.m. game and she would watch. She wouldn't just like drop me off.
Yeah,
she
like,
would
see you later. Right.
Yeah, she would be there and they were really supportive and my sister played hockey too.
We played. Oh, really?
Yeah, we went to rival high schools. Yeah, she went to one high school that had a really good performing arts. She's a great piano player. They had a great performing arts.
Program
mm-hmm. and my mom taught there Red Bank Regional okay. High School and I went to Rumson Fairhaven because they had a really good hockey team. I wanted to out of all the teams that I was watching like I went as a kid in grade school I would go to the high school they were like the big kids.
Oh dude, totally huge yeah.
Yeah and I would go to the rink that I would play I would be at house league at
mm-hmm.
And the high school teams would play on like a Friday night or something like that. And right. there would be all these people. It was like packed.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It was like a sold out show.
Totally.
And
you felt the energy. And,
dude, yeah, it was like being at an NHL show or something.
Right,
like
right.
That. And I thought that was the pinnacle. Like, I was like, oh my God, I want to play for RFH because they are incredible.
Yeah.
And then, all the incredible guys that I played with a bunch of really good people in the year or two that I played at the high school.
Mm-hmm.
But all the guys that I had looked up to, like the goalie. He obviously graduated and
right.
then I was the backup goalie for a little while and
right.
it wasn't the same team and it wasn't the same vibe that I thought it was.
Right.
And,
right.
And that's what made me think of, okay, maybe drums are.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. We all carry around different things that stress us out, right? Like maybe it's something really, really small, like, man, that parking space, it's always taken. And I wish that I would be able to like get it. Instead of, this person that maybe, is the most courteous and considerate. I know that's something very random, but it's true. We all experience different things throughout the day that trigger us in so many different ways. And there are many times where I have been like, I wish that I had a spot or a repository for me to, get this stuff off of my chest. Because if you bottle it up, that is no bueno. And then all of a sudden you explode on a coworker or a friend or a family member being like, the parking spot. And people are like, what are you talking about? That is where therapy comes in. And I love working with BetterHelp because I'm a huge advocate for therapy, broadly speaking. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, please give BetterHelp a try. It is so easy because it's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. All you do is fill out a brief questionnaire and then you get matched with a licensed therapist. And if you are not vibing with the therapist for any reason, you can switch it out at no additional charge. Get things off of your chest with BetterHelp. So visit betterhelp.com/Ray today to get 10% off of your first month. That's betterhelp.com/Ray.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with a king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Cooler. Right. Well, and it's funny. I really like, you hit on a very important point that I think it's like, as we move through our lives, like you should always have those points where it's like, okay, this is what the top means.
Yeah.
And then if you arrived anywhere in that vicinity, you realize like, whoa, this is only the tip of the iceberg. Like, there is so much more to accomplish.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, in the context of music, like,
right.
All I had wanted to do when I was I started playing drums when I was 14, started a band, and all I had ever wanted to do was play at Chubby's, which was, no joke, this is...
So it sounds like an amazing sports bar.
Dude, it is! It was a bar. It was the most depressing bars in Red Bank.
Right.
Telling to keep going back to.
Sure.
It was in Red Bank, and it was on, like, the main street. And I would go to shows there, and I would watch bands that I would just, like, they were, you know, hometown hero kind of bands.
Right.
And across the street was the Internet Cafe, which has actually since closed and become an Urban Outfitters. But okay. The Internet Cafe was amazing. Mm-hmm. They would have floor hardcore shows.
Oh, nice.
And no place around us like had that. There was a VFW hall that was 20 minutes away, but there was the Internet Cafe, which was like 5 minute drive from my house. So
okay. Super safe for you to go to. Like, your parents were okay with that.
Yeah. Internet Cafe. There was, you know, they right. they sell cupcakes in the window.
What harm,
you know,
could be done here?
Yeah. And my favorite band from the area was a band called Away From It All, and they changed their name to Gosh and Surface. And they'd since broke up and went on to other projects, but I think they were around for like a year. But I saw that band, I was just like, oh my God.
Right,
they were
right.
really abrasive, really intense and stuff. And I just like, I ate it up.
Right, right.
But I was never the guy that was like in the pit.
Right.
I just never...
You were just observing.
Right? I was just observing. Yeah, it was kind of weird. That's why the Red Bank hardcore scene is so strange, because I always felt I was on the outskirts just wanting to watch the band and see what they did. And I was like, how could I do that? Like, I couldn't do it. I couldn't at the time. Mm-hmm. I couldn't even fathom like where I would start to do that. But
yeah.
But I knew I really liked it.
Sure,
and that was like my existence within the New Jersey community. I was like, I don't know any of you, and I don't.
Right. Who's that weird kid in the corner?
Like it was really like that. Yeah.
Right.
And I had my best friend at the time. It still is like my best friend. Mm-hmm. We would go to shows
right.
all the time, and we were just the weird kids that were just standing on the side of the room, just right. like not really participating, but just sure. absorbing what the band was doing, and that was really important to me.
And so you're as you were going to high school mm-hmm. and you know, what was your experience like with that, where obviously you were involved in hockey, but mm-hmm. you know, where, because obviously, you know, just putting people into stereotypes yeah. and sort of like, you know, what group did you find yourself like fitting into, and did you like the high school experience, or was it kind of just something that you were doing because obviously you knew it was important to your parents?
Yeah, I didn't like the high school. I didn't mm-hmm. like high school. I spent most of my time by myself, mm-hmm. and I, you know, it's not to be like, oh, I'm God
yeah.
kid.
Alone, I was whatever. Angsty. Yeah, yeah,
yeah, right. yeah. It's just like I didn't relate to really many people. There were a couple people that I'll still even keep in touch with today, mm-hmm. but and teachers that I liked, you know, but a lot of teachers kind of looked at me and thought like, oh, he's probably just going to be trouble. Cause you know, I was the kid when I went in my first day of high school, I had like black nail polish on and I don't know, I guess I had a weird kind of vibe about me that sure. just made teachers in a really, just kind of really conservative part of town. It wasn't really open minded. Whereas my sister's high school was completely open minded.
Well, yeah, like you're saying,
a melting pot of
right
everything,
and a little more liberal arts leaning. Like yeah.
Ours was like football high school, hockey high school,
sure,
baseball high school, whatever. And that's great, but it just wasn't for me. And mm-hmm. I took that time when I, you know, loved playing hockey.
Right.
Got to high school. It wasn't really working out. The team was kind of splitting apart. Mm-hmm. There was really like a clique of people within the team and within my high school that I just didn't get along with.
Right.
You know? And I never went to parties, never right. did any of that. And I kind of, it was when I discovered drums, like mm-hmm. in my freshman year, that I was just like, well, I'm going to take my weekend time and just right. do this. So right. like, Friday and Saturday night, I'm gonna hole up and play the drums, and that's mm-hmm. it. And it was alone, you know. I didn't
right,
play
right,
with
right.
anybody.
Right.
It was just playing. I put on headphones and played records like anybody does.
Right.
And just do that, and then I would, you know, I would go to school, spend time by right. myself. And
there
were
teachers exist in there.
Yeah, I think there were teachers that got that though. Like there were younger teachers who I didn't butt heads with that kind mm-hmm. of got like, oh, he's into, you know, the Ramones and the Clash and stuff that I was into when I was in high school or whatever. And so you felt
that those teachers had a context for where you're coming from, and they didn't, they weren't like, oh, like we just shouldn't even talk to him.
Yeah. There were some that were so far that way that there was no possibility for me to have a good.
And anytime I hear that, it totally, because I imagine your mom would obviously never do that to a student.
Yeah, yeah.
And my mom would never like look, I mean, she may make a judgment on a kid, but yeah. she would never be like, oh, like I shouldn't teach that kid because he's kind of weird looking.
Yeah. My mom told me a funny story uh-huh. a while ago. Funny, like she related to kids based on a lot of music stuff. And
of course,
you know, when John Lennon was killed, mm-hmm. there was a guy that like all she and this kid talked about were the Beatles. The Beatles were his life. Right. And when John Lennon was killed, he came into school just completely
totally
a mess,
sure.
devastated, whatever. My mom was too. And I think they had like a test that day or something. Mm-hmm. And he just like bombed the whole thing. And she
sure.
like gave him because you know
she's like I know what you're
I
going
understand
through.
I know
right,
what you're going
right,
through
right.
so yeah no she was she to compare her to the teachers that I had that were cool
right.
yeah she was definitely
yeah
and she would have been one of those
it just yeah. it just sucks that you obviously hear about people just like in any profession you have your people that are good and you have your people that suck and it's just you just wish that those teachers that sucked and made judgments on kids like
yeah.
you know would just be like all right
yeah
get out of here
yeah
it just always irks me. And so as like when you're, you know, when you started to get into like independent music and obviously starting to get into stuff that maybe your parents didn't have a context for,
yeah.
how do they react to that? Was it, they were just like, oh, what's this weird stuff that
Jay's
bringing home?
I know, yeah. They, it was interesting, and it went through layers, you know, when it went from the Who to the Stones and the Beatles and whatever. And then it took a drastic like left turn when my dad brought me to Ozfest and brought me to see Slipknot and Slayer. And
what possessed him to, was he just like, I think that
were on the Conan show, and he was like, oh my God, these guys are super scary and they wear masks. Like, you're gonna love them. They're really loud and they're crazy.
That's awesome.
And I was into, you know, the hardest thing I listened to was like Dude Ranch.
Right.
Like that, you know?
yeah.
So I was like, okay. And,
sure.
And went to see them, and it blew my mind. So that went my appetite for intense, loud,
getting into more extreme things.
Yeah,
right.
when bombs go off on the amplifiers, and all the guys are yelling, and I had no frame of reference for that. So that was all new to me, and I really wanted to explore it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really young. I was 9 years old.
Right. And I was going to say, because it's funny because I think your musical journey was obviously much more accelerated than what your typical kid would be exposed to.
Based
on obviously your dad's profession. And it was just like, oh yeah, I have all the access to this stuff. Like, let's see if Jay likes this.
Yeah. Well, it was interesting because like my introduction to metal
and
all that, like just heavy stuff came from my dad. Mm-hmm. And then I had a friend whose dad wasn't really into Bad Religion.
Oh, okay.
And so we would drive around and we would listen to, like, you know, American Jesus and stuff. That was the first, like, punk rock song that I heard.
Okay.
And I loved it. So I got into really heavy stuff.
Right.
I got into punk rock stuff and all that. It just kind of blended into itself, you know, because...
Well, wait, at that time too, because you're so young, you're not concerned about like quote unquote scenes. Like, you're just like, it's music.
Yeah, I mean, I still don't get scenes. What the fuck is that?
Totally.
But to me, it was like it was unpolished. It was really just raw. I loved it, and that's what I wanted. I got a lot of that in hockey, and I just stopped getting that when I got into high school. So I wanted another fix of that.
Right.
So that's when I started getting into, I guess, like, you know, independent
music.
Quote unquote independent music. Like, got really into, had a friend whose brother was really into like the drive through bands.
Sure.
Got me into, you know, the movie life and Finch was was on drive through and a lot of those bands, like, accessible bands to listen to, but still, like, you know, it's different.
Edgier,
it's not The Who, you know.
No,
people that
all.
Are into The Who might not get into that stuff.
Not at all.
So, it began that process of finding out all these.
You have all these different inputs.
Yeah,
yeah.
And this is when I started finding music on my own,
because
it wasn't something that my dad handed down to me, or like my friend's dad handed down to me. It was like, okay, I'm finding this out from my friend. And then we go see this band, and then you find out a lot of bands through that, you know, through the drive-through records bands or whatever. I found actually my first club show that I ever gone to was in 2002.
Okay,
my dad brought me and my friend to who's the guy that like got me into drive-through bands, brought me to see Finch, My Chemical Romance, and The Used.
Oh, sure.
When like all of their Finch was on that What It Is to Burn record.
Mike Ham
was on the You Brought Me Your Bullets.
Whatever that
album was. And The Used had just put out their self-titled record.
Oh, yeah. It's huge.
It was a big time for whatever that music was.
Totally.
And that's honestly where that's when I met Brandon Steinecker, who plays in Rancid now.
Mm-hmm.
And since then, I was 12, and I'm 22 now. He's been, like, one of my best friends ever since that day.
That's awesome.
And so that got me into that show in particular was, you know, I was 12 at the time and I saw Brandon playing and I was like, I could do that. That looked really, really, really fun.
Right.
And I think I really want to do that. And
sure.
Still playing hockey at this time, but that's when I was like playing drums in a band looks really cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I want to do that. And that's, I kind of meditated on that for like 2 years.
Right. You know? Yeah, it started. That was the seed that was planted, and then it germinated from there.
Yeah.
So technically, what was the first band that you played in that, you know, whatever, that you played a show where it was like, all right.
First band that I ever played in was, we were called Sadie May.
Okay.
Named after Susan Atkins, who was one of the Manson family members.
Right, right, okay.
And I was 14. I just started playing drums, and we were just like a hardcore metal band.
Okay.
And basically...
And you were playing drums, I presume.
I was playing drums, yeah. And it was my first time I played music with other people, mm-hmm. but I had been playing drums for like, I don't know, maybe like 6 to 8 months.
Okay.
And,
so soon you're like 14, 15?
14, yeah.
Okay,
and,
yeah.
And it was with a guitar player that went to my high school. He was also like a wrestler. And mm-hmm. oh man, he was like, looking back on it, so funny. He would play guitar. He was like this big dude, like sure. weightlifter dude. And he would play this Les Paul that the strap was a giant chain. Like, you know, like chains that you'll like wrap around your tires or whatever?
Of course. Snow. Right.
Yeah,
right.
It was like that. And oh my God.
That's amazing.
Play, yeah. And we would, we were a band that basically just got together, listened to Lamb of God and Shadows Fall
right.
and Slipknot. And we would do that for like 5 hours, and then we would like write a riff
right.
or something like that.
You right. know, we just do a bunch of covers. Yeah. And then, yeah.
We just knew that we like loved heavy music, and we loved just like sitting around mm-hmm. and headbanging.
Right.
And then, oh yeah, we have instruments too. Eh, here's this riff that I was working on. Oh, let's do that. And,
right.
And we played, we were together for 2 years and we played 2 shows.
One show a year.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. And, the first show had, it was at the Saint in Asbury Park.
Okay.
And, that had like 20 to 30 people, all close friends. And
of
family.
Course. Of course.
And then, I think they hated it so much that, people really close to us wouldn't say it, but the second show that we played, like right. a year later,
right.
we asked all those people if like they would want to come see, and
right.
none of them came. We played to the band that played after us.
Oh, one of those shows.
Yeah, one of those shows. And you
yeah,
do
yeah.
that, you know?
Of course.
All bands do that. But
oh, yeah.
But that was our first experience with that, being like 14 years old. And it was,
right.
It was,
well, where is everybody?
Yeah, that was funny. But
that's incredible.
Yeah, but so that, yeah, Sadie May was my first band. Mm-hmm. And
And so then, like, as you were, you know, getting to the point in schooling where it was like, all right, like, you know, what, did you have any sense of, like, you, were you just like, I'm all in for music. I want to try to find a way to, like, make that happen as my life?
Yeah, that was the day that I called my coach and told him that I wasn't going to do, because hockey was my life.
Right.
And now I just, like, one day I was like, okay, hockey's now not my life. Music is my life.
Interesting.
And that's what I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it hasn't changed. Since
right.
then, you know, that was eight years ago.
Right, right.
So, yeah, that was the day when I decided I wasn't going to, and I literally haven't played hockey since then.
Wow.
I've wanted to, you know,
sure.
I've skated a bunch, but
I
haven't
picked up a stick.
I haven't played a game. I've had a lot of friends, like a lot of people in bands
mm-hmm.
I've found, have really like been into hockey, and I'll,
yeah,
you know, we'll talk about like, yeah, oh, we got to play together. It just never happens.
Yeah. Well, it's so much, I mean, hockey is obviously so much harder than just like, hey, let's go to a basketball
yeah.
court.
Oh yeah. 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 No.
Yeah. Hey, let's go get pads and find
and
this and do that.
Get ice time and whatever.
Right.
And, like, and hockey rinks are just like few and far between. They keep
it's true.
Down. The one that I think the one that I had played at a lot in Wall Township,
mm-hmm.
I think it like closed down.
But, oh, wow.
Yeah, because, like, nobody... I mean, hockey is no longer on TV anymore. It used
right.
to be on like, NBC.
It's
and it
true,
used to
yeah.
be
Saturdays, you would have... You 100% have a
yeah.
hockey game on.
Now it's on Versus or whatever.
It's true.
But, like, there's a bunch of channels that, like... Oh, I can't watch my favorite team anymore because
yeah.
I don't have that channel or
yeah.
something like that. And all of them are just, whatever. It's
yeah.
Nobody cares about hockey.
No, it's true. Yeah. yeah. Move to Canada and then that's
yeah,
the
yeah,
national
yeah.
sport.
Yeah, exactly.
And so then as you were, obviously you making the decision that, all right, I want to try to make music my life.
Yeah.
I mean, your parents obviously understood that.
Yeah.
To a certain extent, I'm sure.
Yeah, they didn't understand it when I was just like, oh well, I'm not gonna finish high school. I'm gonna start a band, and I'm gonna just tour because that's what people do now.
Right.
And
so was that your sophomore or junior year that you were
sophomore, like end of my sophomore year?
Yeah.
That I I started another band.
Okay.
And it was my favorite thing, and I dedicated, you know, all my time to it, and became just the, like, the asshole guy in the band that just, like, ran everything.
Of course.
Because anybody, like, looking back on it, I wish I had kind of given other people that were around us and other people in the band, like, yeah. Oh, yeah, you can do this, and you can do this.
Right,
I
was like, right.
Nope. I got everything covered.
Yeah. And I'm sure, I mean, to be fair, just hearing it from the outsider's perspective, it's like, you had quit everything to do that.
Yeah.
Whereas I imagine a lot of other people that are in that situation are like, you know, they're still going to high school.
Yeah. So I didn't quit high school. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But the band, it was everything to me.
Right.
And, every, you know, I had a free period in high school. Every free period, I was designing a flyer for a show. And that band we actually played a lot. It was called Chaosis.
Okay.
And that band we played a bunch. Like, we would play at least once a month. Mm-hmm. And we ended up, that was the first band where I ended up playing, throwing shows at my house.
Oh, nice.
And, yeah, and it was cool because it was like...
That's definitely such a part of New Jersey.
Yeah.
Having shows at houses, whereas, like, out here on the West Coast, it's like... Yeah, you can have, like, a band play for, like, 10 minutes and then the cops show up.
Yeah. No, here it was, or in New Jersey, it was different. And I didn't learn about, like, wow, New Jersey really does have a lot of shows. I learned that way later.
Right.
I thought it was, like, a unique thing that we were doing.
Right.
Which is
awesome.
Yeah. And we ended up being, like the competition for the local promoters, who ended up, like, we put on a show on a Saturday, had a... One of the shows, actually, I think the first one, we had Sadie Mae, because they continued. I quit that band to start this other band.
Okay.
And they got another drummer, and I was still friends with them, and they played this show, and my band will headline, you know? And put on at least, like, a show a month, like, the last Saturday of every month.
Mm-hmm.
And, excuse me, we had a bunch of, like a Halloween party, and we would get, just get a lot of pizza, people that were into the Red Bank scene, people that we liked, people that, like, we wanted to be there.
Uh-huh.
We invited them, and it got to the point where, like, everybody that would go to, the local promoter at the time was called Jersey Shows.
Mm-hmm.
It might still be around, but, they put on shows, and we would have one, like, the same night or something like that.
Yeah.
And everybody that was going to go... I remember there was one time, everybody that was going to go to, you know, X band, whatever, came to our show. And we packed it. It was awesome. It was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a call from that promoter.
Oh.
And because he had put on a lot of our shows when we were just starting out. And he was like, what the fuck? Like, you're taking all my, you know, all these
all
people.
All my business. Right.
And I was just like, sorry?
Yeah.
I guess?
Right.
But... I wasn't sorry.
Yeah.
You know, I was happy. I was like,
right, you were because you were building something on your own that was so, like, organic and just like fun.
Yeah. But like you said, that was everything.
Mm-hmm.
Planning, you know, making flyers and planning these house shows and trying to get in touch with people that ran the Knights of Columbus on, you know, on 36 where we lived.
Sure.
That was all top priority to me.
Right.
School was secondary.
Sure.
Completely. Like, it was an afterthought. And I still wanted to, like, I did well on quizzes and stuff, and like that's probably, like you said, just from having a mom
in your DNA.
It's
right.
in your DNA to want to, like, okay, well, if I got like a 70 on this, well, I should do better, and whatever. So I wanted to be a good student, graduated, and that's when music was, like, you know.
Yeah. So the whole plan was that, like, obviously once you graduated high school, you're like, this is, I want to find a way to make a living off of music.
I mean, I had no idea how I was going to do it.
I didn't
know.
But you knew that's what you wanted to do.
I knew I wanted to do it. I just had no idea of what I would do. So to kind of to combat that, I went to a college where I didn't know anybody. A lot of people I knew went to college because they were going with, like, several other people.
Of course,
and,
right.
You know, I wanted to go. My sister got into NYU.
Mm-hmm.
She went there. And I would go up to New York. This is actually, to back up a little bit,
sure.
from when I was, like, 13 through 17, I guess, like, when I graduated high school, I would go up to New York, like, every weekend and hang out, try and find shows and stuff. And I would go to, like, my sister was right in the Village.
Okay.
So that was around, like, the St. Mark's area.
Sure,
there was a lot
of
music happening around there.
Tons.
CBGB's was there. Like,
yep.
I got to go there a bunch before it closed.
Mm-hmm.
Got to play there. It was awesome.
That's rad.
Yeah, but I was going up to New York a lot, and I wanted to, I saw so much stuff happening around NYU, and I was like, oh my God, I really want to go there. I got to go there. Sent all my stuff, applied, and didn't get in. And I was like, I was crushed, but I was just like, well, whatever, I'll find something else.
Right.
And and then I applied to Stevens in Hoboken, mm-hmm. and I'm so much happier there. That's where I still am.
Right.
I live across the street from where the school is.
Oh, okay.
And it's, you know, it's been such a better home because mm-hmm. it's, well, a lot of reasons are separate from this story, but, but so anyway, I wanted to go to NYU and be in like the midst of all that.
Of course. And, you wanted to be right in the middle of it.
Right in the middle of it. Go to shows all the time.
Of course.
And be around, you know, the Village area and Washington Square Park and whatever.
Right.
That's the thing. And, but I didn't know what I was going to do musically. My band, you know, Chaosis had split up.
Right.
Because we all went to different schools.
Mm-hmm.
This is a total true story. I went on MySpace
mm-hmm.
looking, because when MySpace was like,
well, dude, yeah, yeah.
2008.
Of course.
It was still
huge. Yeah,
Facebook
yeah.
was getting there.
Right, right.
MySpace was still the big thing.
Of course.
And I went on MySpace looking at New York bands. I don't know how I would look for it, but like I would look for New York bands that needed a drummer.
Need a drummer, sure.
And I found the one that appealed to me the most. Mm-hmm. It was a band called The Reveling.
Okay.
From New York. It was like a punk band. Auditioned, and it felt awesome. So I was like, okay.
So you just sent them a message. You're like, hey, I hear I can play.
Yeah, like they had a thing like, hey, so-and-so is going off to get his doctorate or something like that, or going off to do more school. So we need a drummer. And
We're looking
for a drummer. So that was it. And I had just started school.
Mm-hmm.
I got the Reveling, and we're playing shows at what I still feel was like really important. And I still, whenever I'm home,
mm-hmm.
I try and go to like random shows in Brooklyn. You know, mm-hmm. like at there was one place. Oh God, I forget what it was called, but it was a great like punker flat.
Oh,
place
sure.
That it was like a two-level thing.
Mm-hmm.
Show happened on the first level.
Sure.
You go upstairs and you find that there's a giant hole cut out in the floor of the second story. And there's like bikes hanging everywhere and every wall is spray painted.
Right.
And we would play shows here because the band, they're much older than me. They were like, I was 18.
Sure.
And I think our guitar player was like 27.
Oh, okay.
Or something like that. So that was the age difference.
Sure.
And,
where was I going? Yeah, no, but see,
yeah, so I would go to these places that like, I'm like, wow, this kind of place exists. And you can see it in, you know, SLC punk,
right?
You don't think that this is in,
sure,
whatever. You just don't think about that kind of stuff when you're 17 or 18.
Of course.
And so, but then I would go and we played these shows and I really loved it. And it was fun. Once I had been doing that for like, I was in college doing that simultaneously mm-hmm. with college and like, okay, classes end, I go to New York to practice and then I come back and it was cool. It was a routine that I really liked.
Yeah.
And then the scheduling conflict came up with my dad and the TV show that he was going to have to be at the start of the Tonight Show mm-hmm. at the same time that one of the E Street Band's tours were going to start.
Right.
And they needed somebody to fill in.
Yeah.
And that was kind of what like interrupted everything.
Sure.
In the best way possible.
Well, of course. Yeah.
But
hey, do you want to play in front of a few people? I don't know. Maybe.
So that was kind of like this moment where I was kind of, you know, doing the high school band stuff, doing the college band
thing.
And then all of a sudden this interesting opportunity came up where it was
sure.
like, I didn't think, nobody thought of that this would ever, that it would ever happen.
Right.
You know? And, but it just kind of happened.
Right.
And,
how did your dad introduce that to you? Was he just hey, how did, like...
Yeah, it was weird. What had happened was over years, you know, since the band got back together, you know, before they got back together, they all had kids.
Right.
And, you know, my sister and me included.
Right.
And all the kids of the band have, mm-hmm. like, gotten up on stage and played. Like, my sister, I was in awe of what my sister did when she was, like, 13. She got up and played keyboard to a song.
That's incredible.
Yeah, when they played a show in New York,
right.
and I thought that was incredible, and I was just like, oh man, like that's just the next level,
right?
And all the kids, I think like everybody who had a kid, their kid has been on stage.
Right.
I was the last one.
Oh, never okay. Done it. Sure.
Just because, well, I don't play guitar. Right. I don't play bass. Well, I do, but like it's not good.
Right.
And
right.
What, you're going to have me sit on the drums?
Right.
You can't.
Yeah,
if I'm messing up, you can't just pull that down in the mix.
That's like, true. Yeah, yeah.
That's just not.
Yeah, this is way too obvious if you fucks up.
Exactly. It's right. Just, it's over. And totally. Like I said, that's that pressure situation of like being a goalie. You draw yeah. A lot of parallels to the drummer. It's like.
Sure, sure.
And my dad, they were doing one of their last shows mm-hmm. of that whole touring kind of
cycle.
Sure. And he was like, why don't you play with us at Soundcheck? Do a song at Soundcheck.
Oh, okay.
I was like, yeah, that'd
yeah,
be awesome.
Fun. That's easy. Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. So we did Born to Run at Soundcheck.
Uh-huh.
And it sounded good.
Right.
It sounded like it was fun.
Yeah.
I loved it. And I had never played with like in-ear monitors and there's a band.
Right.
And,
right.
Like, whatever. It was a whole new just sensory overload thing, but I sure. loved it. And so then, yeah, it felt really good. So, that night they were like, well, why don't we just do that during the show?
Yeah.
And so we did. And it was right before I had gone to college. It was like, it was the summer before I had started college, like a couple, maybe 2 weeks before.
Right.
And it was a giant stadium. And
right.
We did that. And that was amazing.
Yeah. I mean, those are the sort of experiences where it's like obviously you can reflect on it now and be like, that was amazing. But you're just like that you could pull yourself together enough to be like, all right, like, this is what I'm doing.
Well, it was only for that one day. I knew I was like, I'm going to do this to say I did it.
Right.
And then that's it. And right. then I never have to do it again.
Sure.
And I've been there, you know, like right. I can say that I did that. And,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
And that was it. Never thought of doing it again. That
sure.
It was a moment in time and that was it.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
But then the scheduling conflict happened with the Tonight Show and,
right.
and the tour. And yeah, my dad had asked me, like I would go back home all
of course.
Between like on the weekends and stuff to play drums because my drums were at my house.
Sure.
And my dad asked me, he said, like, hey, I don't know if this is actually gonna happen, but I think the tour is gonna coincide with the Tonight Show happening.
Mm-hmm.
I'll need to be in two places at once and I can't, and we need to find somebody to play.
Right.
So you might get asked to do this. He's wow. like, I don't know if it's gonna happen.
Right, right.
But
I'm just prepping you.
Yeah, he's like, don't be disappointed if it doesn't happen, but it might happen.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened. And
that's crazy.
Yeah. And Bruce asked if I would want to do it.
Sure.
And I did it. And I said yeah. And that was like that's when everything became casual. Like, yeah, you gotta play a show on the weekend or something like that. That's when it became something that just like took all my attention.
Of course.
And I was still doing school at
right.
the time too. So I kind of posed it to the school. I was like, hey, I really want to do school and I really want to do this, but I also have this.
Yeah, I kind of can't say
this
no
awesome
to this.
Opportunity.
Right.
I would love to do both if that's okay with you. But
sure.
if I have to choose one or the other,
right.
I hope you are right. comfortable.
You, okay. you may have heard of the boss. I have to play with him.
That was kind of what it came down to.
Sure.
So they were like, well, let's see if you can do it.
Right.
Let's see if that's something that we can make happen. And we made it happen.
That's
you know,
awesome.
Through like a couple US tours and European tours.
Sure.
It was over 2009.
Right.
And, you know, some of the most, formative experience that I've ever had, you know, I was 18.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sports books today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cashback on purchases and pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
Well, yeah, and I think it's so cool because it's like you were able to, I mean, obviously step into something that is so massive. I mean, it's an empire, and to be able to, you know, to be able to develop, like you said, you took it super seriously, and it's like, you know, that you weren't obviously going to disrespect, you know, your family, your dad, but just being like, whatever, dude, like here, it's like no, I'm fucking showing up, I'm doing this, and it's like that obviously will bleed over to all of your experiences within life and be like, no matter what I'm doing, I'm going to do this and I'm going to dedicate myself to it. Cause like you said, you didn't want to be like, you know, half-assing two things.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it was the biggest thing that had happened in my life.
Of course.
Up until then. So I wanted to take it really seriously. And, and that's what just kind of like set the stage for everything that I wanted.
Right.
I learned that I wanted to do this,
right,
and through doing that whole tour and whatever, I got a taste of like, this is what it's like to do it.
Sure.
And I knew it wasn't, you know, I knew from day one that it wasn't going to be forever.
Right.
You know,
it's not your reality from here on out.
No,
right.
It's not reality, man.
Right.
But it's great. And it is my family, you know,
right,
like those people.
And you'd been around them for so long.
At that point, I had been on the road with them for like 9 years.
Right.
But even before then, you know, my dad was still close to everybody.
Of course.
So I had known those people since I was a little baby.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, it was a real family. And I've been like, everybody, all the people on the tour,
of course,
are just like, they're friends and fans, still are, you know?
Right, right.
That's honestly why I'm here in California right now.
Right.
It's to just like hang out, you know?
Yeah.
They're my favorite band.
Right.
Know? So any opportunity I get when I'm off tour now, I want to watch them do what they do.
Well, of course. Yeah. Cause like, I mean, it's all you view that as is it's an extension of your family. It's like,
yeah,
this has
really
essentially
is.
Been able to take care of you. I mean, financially and like just basically be able to give you this support system that you have just outside of your immediate family.
Yeah. And Bruce was awesome in helping me find out really what I wanted to do with
mm-hmm.
the drums. And
that's cool.
Yeah, almost like through like not even saying anything. It was just the vibe that he projects.
Sure.
You know, it was you can't describe it other than, you know, it was just awesome.
It was an amazing experience.
Yeah. And
so how did you, because obviously, like, I remember, I mean, honestly, when I first became knowledgeable of you is when, you know, when the news about Madball came out, where it was just
okay.
Like, oh yeah, like Jay Weinberg. I mean, like, I, you know what, I had maybe heard of your name, but like more of a fixture within the independent music, where it's like, you know, you start to see like, you know, punknews.org be
yeah.
like, hey, Jay Weinberg, son of Max Weinberg, is playing for Madball, and
everyone
right. was like, what?
Yeah,
it, like,
which was everybody's reaction,
of course.
Which was
I imagine.
I love that.
Right. It's like during that whole experience. I mean, like you said, you've obviously done you know, a number of interviews, and you know, obviously you guys split off. It didn't work out, et cetera, et cetera. But like when that initial experience happened for you, where it was like, all right, I am going to join Madball, which like is like, you know, what? I mean, was it it was obviously because you wanted to push yourself and challenge yourself in a way. But then, you know, did you receive a lot of that feedback where it was just like, what, Madball, like, this is such a weird move. Like,
yeah. But like, to me, it wasn't weird.
Sure.
It was natural.
Right.
It happened naturally. But, and like, I would talk about people, cause people would ask me, you know, like, oh, so what's your background? Like, what kind of bands do you play in? And I'm like, I play in metal bands and I play in like, yell your head off kind of bands. And,
sure.
And these are my favorite bands. And these are the bands I really look up to.
Right.
And they're all like, oh yeah, whatever. But you're like, you're a rock and roll drummer and you play rock and roll. And you know, I was playing with the E Street Band and stuff like that. So,
right.
So I don't think people really took that side of me that seriously.
I can imagine.
Whatever.
When you've done something like what you have, and obviously your family, your pedigree, people are going to look at you and judge you. Like, plain and simple.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you've experienced that through, I mean, a lot of aspects in your life where it's just like, oh, that's the fucking kid. Like, that's the... But then when you're able to do... The thing that I respect about... I mean, this is fast-forwarding, but the thing I respect about you the most is the fact that you've obviously been able to, embrace what you've been raised around, but then also obviously set your own course. Because it's like, there's a lot of times where it's like, people that have been introduced to, a non-traditional environment, such as yourself, right, where it's like, you know, a musician family and everything, sometimes they just become, kind of a parody and a joke of themselves,
yeah,
where it's just like, I mean, this is a random example, but it's like, a person like, a comedian like Pauly Shore, where it's like, his mom, you know, was like the person who did the Comedy Store in LA, and she started that. It's like, of course he had no choice but to become a comedian. And then it's like, you know, when he was doing his thing, like, of course he had his own unique voice, but then it's like, you know, after his sort of star was not rising anymore, it was going down, people were just, you know, he's a joke.
Yeah.
And it was like, I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, he was trying to force himself into like, okay, I'm still going to be this comedian. I'm going to be this person. But it's like, looking at what you've done where it's just like, all right, I've done this. I'm playing with Madball, playing with Against Me. And you're just like, all you're doing is what you have wanted to do once you started to figure out what drums were.
Thanks. Yeah. I love, obviously I love my dad, you know, and he and my mom and just everybody that's been close to me, like they have been super supportive and I love that. It surprises some people when I say I didn't take drum lessons or anything like that. And, just because, and I find that the most valuable thing that my dad gave me was just freedom to do whatever, find out, I found this on myself. You find it for yourself.
Right.
So that's what it was. And I just had to find out what I wanted to do music. And I just gravitated towards different things. We grew up in completely different ages, where my version of the Beach Boys and the Dave Clark Five or whatever, music that's, still, it's relevant and cool or whatever.
Right.
Those bands that were like, my dad had those bands.
Right.
I had, Mastodon. And I had all these just bands, these aggressive bands that I just gravitated towards.
Of course.
So when I was doing all these bands in high school and then I went to do the E Street Band, I love rock and roll. Everything to me, just as long as it had a heart and it had a soul to it and it had a purpose, that was just, it resonated with me.
Sure.
And that's all the stuff that still resonates with me. But that all made sense. And then to go to Madball, it made sense. But it didn't make sense to some people.
It doesn't make sense to people that are on the outside looking in. You're like, because they can't, they don't trace you contextually to where you ended up. They're just like, oh, it's like, oh yeah, this. Like Madball hired a session drummer. I'm sure that's a lot of people were just like, oh yeah, like this kid, this is just like a publicity stunt for Madball.
Yeah. Well, it happened in like the most natural way. Like we've been mutual friends. We've had mutual friends.
Right.
Through H2O. Mm-hmm. The wife of H2O's guitar player, Rusty, her name's Debbie.
Sure.
She worked with my dad for like 15, probably more years.
Sure.
And she got me into punk rock. You know, she handed me down like all these great records and got me into H2O and stuff like that. So through H2O and going to H2O shows, I became familiar with Madball because they're so close. And we had a lot of mutual friends, met you know, met with Mitz, the Madballs guitar player, and I was doing the this drum off thing. This was like kind of shortly after the E Street Band tour. It all wound down, and I was kind of like, all right, now is time. What's my next chapter? And I was still doing the Reveling at the time. I was doing that simultaneously, doing the E Street Band and the Reveling at the same time.
Sure.
So I was already busy, but I was kind of looking for like, well, man, I kind of want to be more occupied.
Right.
And,
well, I'm sure you also wanted to obviously be able to, you know, contribute creatively as well. Like even more so, because like the Reveling, you obviously joined up as they were going.
And yeah. Like, but that's the thing is like, since high school, like I was just like joining bands.
Right.
Whenever like I joined the Reveling.
Right.
Because they needed a drummer and I looked them up and they needed a drummer.
Right.
I, you know, played with the E Street Band because they needed a drummer.
You joined them. Yeah, yeah.
Right. And you know, then Madball needed a drummer.
Right.
So I was doing this drum off thing with my dad. Uh-huh. And Mitz saw, who I'd like just seen like a couple weeks before then and had talked about hockey. He's a big hockey fan.
Right.
And talked a lot about hockey and like exchanged information. He saw that I was doing this drum off thing and he sent me an email like, hey, do you know any drummers that are out there that would want to play with Madball? Because like we, you know, we need a guy and let me know. Like, let me know if there's anybody out there. And I emailed him back. I was like, what if I did it?
Yeah.
I'll do it. And he was like, yeah, you'd be into doing that? And I was like, yeah. So that's just how bands got together together, you know?
It's the simplest of stories where it's just like, yeah, like, you know, friends and you know people and you just, it's a simple question.
Yeah. Yeah. So, so to me, like drawing the lineage between the E Street Band and Madball is different. And
of course.
Maybe it's not predictable.
Yeah.
But to me, it was natural.
Of course.
It makes sense.
Right.
So yeah, did, you know, I had a horrible audition. I remember that. because it was really short notice. Like the tour, this was the Rebellion tour that we were talking about.
Right.
This was maybe like 2.5 weeks after I had just exchanged emails with him.
Oh shit.
So he sent me like, you know, 20 something songs, whatever, like the set.
Yeah. And it's not like Madball doesn't have a lot of songs to choose from. It's like, here's this library of of music. How about you learn a few?
Honestly, that was that, out of, you know, all the performance experience and all the amazing things that I'll always cherish and carry with me from the E Street Band.
Right.
One of the things that I found most important was the ability to learn a song really quickly.
Right.
Because
it's true.
What we would do typically is there were like 5 songs. There was like 15, maybe like 20 songs that would stay in the set list.
Right.
And then like another 15 or something that would like switch
interchangeable,
out.
Sure.
Yeah. Always changing, always keeping it fresh. And they do that more than ever now. Jesus
right.
Christ. But you know, I would be learning like 5 songs a day while we were on the road,
right.
Like going, like driving to the show, I'd have my iPod on and like Bruce would give me a list of, you know, 5 songs, learn these on the way to the sound check and then we'd play those. And that was, you know, it's not like polyrhythm crazy craziness going on, but it's a
song you need to learn nonetheless.
Yeah, and so that helped me with like, okay, Madball tour coming up in 2 weeks. I got 25 songs to learn. I can do this. And so I was in California at the time, flew back, did a show at the Reveling, and then the next morning I had my audition with Madball.
Okay.
And I was jet lagged. I was tired. I'd been up all night doing this show with the Reveling.
Right.
And I played horribly.
Yeah.
It was bad. But but I think I showed enough like drive to to make them be. Or it was me, Mitz, and Paul Delaney.
Mm-hmm.
He's a good friend who plays bass and plays in Black Anvil and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I played horribly, but I think I was like, yeah, like I really want to do this.
You're like, my enthusiasm showed
I think
through.
Maybe that compensated for what I just could not do on the drums. And then I came back like the week after or whatever. I'd practice all the stuff. And
sure. Yeah, then they were like, all right, here we go.
Yeah, and then I met Freddie the day, or like maybe like 2 hours before our first show.
You're like, hey, here's Freddie. We'll be playing together.
It was what it was.
You just got thrown in.
Yeah. And then did the Rebellion tour, and that was my first European tour where I wasn't like in my comfort zone, you know,
of course.
not with people that I've known all my life.
Right.
And,
yeah, it's your first touring experience outside of what you've known.
Yeah. Sure. You know, I'd done tours, like the Reveling toured out to Chicago and back, and right. with Chaosis, we went to Florida and back.
Got
it. When we were like 16 or whatever. Mm-hmm. Our guitar player, his dad, ran a Dodge dealership, and we couldn't rent cars.
No, you're kidding? 16. Yeah.
Yeah. So we rented like a, you know, like a van, and
right.
you know, but we couldn't, like,
right.
we couldn't legally. So,
right.
we rented a van and drove down to, like all did shows all the way to Florida and stuff. And that was my first experience touring. But
right.
so then I did all this stuff, and then I went on tour with Madball, did that. And, it was amazing. I mean, you know, went to all these countries and saw all this culture and saw mm-hmm. like, saw so much stuff and really got into, I was like, yes, this is the music community I've been dreaming of, this community that's based on like aggressive music
mm-hmm.
and just like I felt so good about it. And
right.
And then yeah, they went to Greece. That was awesome.
Right.
There.
And because you played with them for about like a year, year and a half or so?
Yeah, a little less than a year.
Yeah, okay.
But did that, and we basically came home from that, and then like the week after that was mm-hmm. like, all right, we got to make a new record.
Right.
So let's start writing a new record.
Right.
And it was at that time I was still doing a full course load of stuff at school
mm-hmm.
and still doing the Reveling.
Right.
So it was just kind of like, you know, doing a lot of stuff. And I unfortunately had to leave the Reveling, and I wanted to keep doing it.
Yeah.
Well,
you'd been with it for so long. Right?
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, it was a bummer, but I had to make the decision to like, well, Madball's going to be really active
mm-hmm.
and I feel really good about it. So.
Right. And you're in the process of getting a new record with them, and like, yeah, you feel
yeah.
part of it. Right.
Yeah. And we were getting together like every day jamming in our practice space and,
mm-hmm.
Made a record. And then, you know, the stuff that happened, it's whatever, it's in the past, and
right.
you move on. But,
well, yeah, I mean, it's like you were saying earlier in regards to, you know, people come from different cultures, and it's like in all the professional dealings I've ever dealt with Madball, they just come from a different world,
yeah.
like from either from what I've come from what you've come from. And so when you have, it's already difficult enough to be in a band, but when you are combining people from completely different walks
yeah.
and are trying to have them all be creative, be business-minded,
yeah.
it's difficult.
Yeah, yeah. It's and not to mention, I'm like, at this point, I'm still 19.
Right, you're
you know?
A kid.
Yeah, and and so, which I mean, that's not far from where I am right
no,
now.
No, no.
22, but
right.
But you know. It just got to the point it didn't work out.
Yeah,
stuff doesn't work out, you
no,
know? And,
totally.
And I look back on it as a great experience. I traveled, I
right.
made music.
Sure.
I was really proud of everything that we'd done. And it was a chapter in my life that, you know, came to a close.
Of course.
And that was it.
Yeah.
So that's all.
And then the transition point into, Against Me was
yeah.
the, I mean, that it's, once I heard that obviously you were playing with them, to me, it seems like it just makes sense.
Cool. That's
just,
awesome.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just feels like it's like not only do you stylistically fit in with them, just like from a drummer perspective and just like obviously your own upbringing, but it just, you know, the way that the band especially is going now where it's like, you know, a lot more control is falling directly into their hands
mm.
or your guys' hands.
Yeah.
And so it's just, you know, it's exciting. Like,
yeah. Yeah, it happened in a really natural way.
Mm-hmm.
I left Madball,
right.
and I was gonna focus on school and just do that.
Sure,
and, you know, moved back. Like I was in Hoboken for a while, and I was gonna concentrate on school, and then the whole just that, you know, whatever ugliness had got online about the Madball stuff
yep.
Happened, and literally like the day that got became public, our bass player Andrew he called me, and we've been friends to back up a little bit
yeah.
I have I've been friends with you know, with Laura and James and Andrew
mm-hmm.
and Jordan since I was 13 or 14
mm-hmm.
you know, we met really young, and Against Me was the band that toured so often that they would be in my area
right
four or five times a year
yeah yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So So it was like every couple weeks, I would go to an Against Me show and bring my friend or something like that. And it was a band that I just got the closest to just by nature of like, we saw each other so often.
Of course.
You know, I'd see other friends' bands every 2.5 years.
Sure.
Just because they don't tour as much or they're off wherever, I don't know, whatever.
But, yeah.
But they would be in New York or New Jersey all the time.
Right.
And so I would go to their shows and we ended up, we would do this thing like Warren jumped in front of the drums during the last song at a show in New York. And I was like, I was standing right behind the kit, like off to the side. And I was like, he's not coming back. And
right.
So I like got up and finished. We Laugh at Danger and Break All the Rules.
Okay.
And it has that clapping section. And then we had talked about me like, oh yeah, like jam on the last song or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it happened and it was awesome. And it became this like fun thing that we would do occasionally.
Yeah. When you were there and everyone was like,
it'd be a fun thing. And so we did that. And we just became friends, kept in touch and
sure.
whatever. And Andrew called me and he was like, hey, are you going to be around for these shows? Because I know you don't have a band anymore.
Right.
And,
he's like, I was reading some stuff online.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm aware.
Yeah. Yeah. And he was like, are you doing anything? Cause we need somebody and you know, we'd I would want to jam with you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was like, yes.
Yes.
And without, you know, hesitation, I just knew it was going to be awesome.
Right.
And so then like I meditated on that for a little bit and like I called my best friend who like the band we got together on was like Against Me.
Sure.
And we would go to shows all the time, whatever. It was awesome.
Right.
And so I called him. I was like, dude, guess what? It's happened. And so anyway, I called Andrew back the next day and I was like, dude, just so you know, I really, really want to do this.
Right.
So like,
yeah, I'm pretty serious about this.
Like, dude,
right.
Yeah. Like I really want to play with you guys.
Right.
So, and it was just going to be for these three shows.
Right.
Or, whatever, like a couple radio shows in, radio festivals in Florida and one in California.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I really want to do this. Like, I would love to play a couple shows with you guys.
Right.
And so he was like, okay, cool. I'll, you know, pass it on. And, we, you know, talked through email and stuff. And then, I got down to Florida where they all are.
Right.
And we jammed. I got down there and I thought we were just going to like go out, get some food or whatever and jam the next day. But we went to the practice space and jammed from like 10 at night to like 4 in the morning. And,
that's awesome.
And it was just so much fun.
Right.
Because those are the songs of my childhood.
Of course.
You know, those are songs that I remember, you know, it was awesome.
Yeah,
so, yeah,
yeah,
whatever.
It's nostalgic for you to like, you're like, wow, I had to actually play these songs that meant so much to me.
Exactly.
That still means so much.
Exactly.
To me.
And that was, I mean, really, it's kind of like a common thread that, you know, through like the E Street Band and Mad Boss, like these are all parts of, my just learning music,
right?
That like the E Street Band, like, you know, Bruce Springsteen and the E Street Band was my music. That was my upbringing.
Of course,
I was around those songs for so long. So to be playing them felt like second nature, and then to be playing Against Me songs felt like second nature,
right?
And it felt so good that the next morning they were just like, "You want to just join the band?"
Yeah.
So that's what it was.
Yeah,
that's what we've been doing.
Yeah, that's what you've been doing ever since.
Yeah,
that's so cool. I really do like how. You know, to sort of wrap this up in conclusion.
Yeah.
I like how you're pulling on this the thread of like there is a commonality between all of these.
Yeah.
Because obviously, like you said, most people would look at these and just be like, "Oh, these are like, you know, maybe you could put Madball Against Me in a somewhat similar world." But obviously, your experience with the E Street Band is something completely different. But it's like essentially all musicians start out with obviously similar goals and similar contexts.
Yes.
You know, there are very few, I mean, even though you could look at the musical culture right now and think that there are a lot of people that are just simply starting bands or playing music to make money, there's always going to be an element of that.
Yeah, yeah.
But with everything that you have experienced, that's like, you know, Madball wasn't starting off and like, all right, we're going to make this a 30 plus year career.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, Against Me is the same thing. They're like, no, we just want to play all the living rooms and across America.
Right.
And, you know, Bruce Springsteen, like you can easily trace back to where he was when he started. And it's like, those are all common themes. And like the fact you've been able to kind of experience all those different worlds, just like you said, makes it all the more clear to you, but to another person might be like, oh, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, to me, it makes sense.
Right.
It's all one big thing.
Sure.
To me,
yeah. I'm very glad that you were able to hang out and lay this all out. Cause I was just excited to talk to you about all your different experiences because you got a lot of them.
Thanks. Thank you very much for having me.
No problem, dude.
All right. So there you have it, everybody. I definitely like in the middle of the interview where he says Bruce and I didn't even bat an eye. And upon listening to it again and editing it, I was like, oh yeah, that's Bruce Springsteen. I never thought I'd have a person on the podcast that would be able to refer to Bruce as Bruce and not be like, you can't say that. You can't call him that. It's like calling Dave Matthews Dave, like you know him. Jay will obviously land on his feet somewhere else awesome in the near future. Visit propertyofzach.com and 100wordspodcast.com. And until next week, be safe, everybody.
The show is sponsored by BetterHelp. Trust me in saying that no matter who you are, mental health challenges can affect you, and how you manage them can make all of the difference. That's why everyone should have access to mental health support that meets them where they are and helps them get through. BetterHelp provides online therapy on your schedule. It's flexible, simple to use, and more affordable than in-person therapy. Connect with a licensed therapist selected just for you. Learn more at BetterHelp.com. That's BetterHelp.com.
Whether you're a savvy spender maximizing your savings with cashback rewards, a thrifty rate watcher seeking the lowest interest, or a travel enthusiast looking for extraordinary perks, Kemba Financial Credit Union has a Visa to complement your lifestyle and unique needs. Apply today at Kemba.org to unlock a limited-time 2% cash back on purchases. And pay 0% interest on balance transfers for an entire year with a new Visa from Kemba. You deserve a card that works for you. Restrictions apply. Offer ends June 30th, 2024.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.